Every human life has purpose, even those yet unborn. Tragically, abortion kills many Americans each year. One man that has been creatively working to get the pro-life message out there is Ryan Bomberger, co-founder of the Radiance Foundation, and he writes this, quote, "In our life-affirming efforts, we've been officially denounced by Planned Parenthood, the ACLU, and the NAACP. We've even been sued by the nation's oldest, quote-unquote, civil rights group. They lost." Ryan joins us right now on Vocal Point. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Ryan, great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here with you.
Tell us about that lawsuit. You were sued by the nation's oldest civil rights group, and they lost.
It was surreal. Now, picture this. First of all, people can't tell over the radio that I'm brown. I'm half white, half black, so that just makes me American. And so here, we were sued by the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People because I dared to parody their name, which actually spoke the truth about their pro-abortion position. They partner with Planned Parenthood. They defend Planned Parenthood. So I, in a news article, was writing about them and using their own documentation and called them the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People. And they didn't like it. So they sued me. They sued the Radiance Foundation. Just the irony of suing a brown guy for exercising one of my most basic civil rights, free speech. And 2 years in federal court, we lost at the first district court, but Alliance Defending Freedom stuck in there with us, and they defended us. And 2 years later, we were victorious and won that very important free speech case.
Wow. Congratulations. Now, you'll be speaking at the January 2019 Chicago Right to Life rally.
Yes. Yes, where it'll be nice and tropical. Can't wait.
I can't imagine that. How did you get involved in the pro-life message and pro-life movement?
Well, you know, it's something that just courses through my veins, at least the passion for defending the most vulnerable and the most powerless. My own story was a birth mom who experienced the horror and the violence of rape, yet she chose life and gave me the incredible gift of adoption. So I grew up in a small little family of 15. I have 6 brothers, 6 sisters. 10 of us are adopted. We're white and black and biracial, Native American, Vietnamese, just a mixture. And grew up loved, adopted and loved. And now I'm an adoptive father. I have 4 children, 2 of whom are also adopted. And so my wife and I started the Radiance Foundation back in 2009 because we wanted to tackle tough issues, but yet equip Christians to know how to engage in these culture-shifting issues. And so through the Radiance Foundation, we illuminate that every human life has purpose. That's why we do what we do. We know that God designed us. My wife, Bethany, my favorite person on the planet, he designed us to do what we do through the Radiance Foundation. My wife was a teacher for 13 years, and I worked as a creative director in the ad agency world for about the same amount of time.
I've seen some of your PowerPoint presentations. They're very powerful, very well done, a lot of animation and so forth. Can people see that stuff at radiance.org or radiance.life?
Yes, the original memes, original videos, infographics, fact sheets, lots of journalism, creatively illuminated. All that's there at radiance.life. We're really passionate about doing everything with excellence and, of course, about illuminating the most fundamental issue, which is life. I mean, without life, nothing else matters. So we try to engage people and create messaging that resonates. And God has opened up so many doors that we never would have expected through our work.
Okay, if one were to go and hear you speak, what would be some of the main points that you would make that you haven't said already?
Well, we do tackle a myriad of social issues, all in the context of God-given purpose. So that allows us to talk about the fundamental issue of life, of course. We talk about abortion. We talk about adoption. We talk about fatherlessness and poverty. We talk about free speech and intact families and religious liberty, all of these issues in the context of God-given purpose. So when we go into events, for instance, recently I spoke at Wheaton College and didn't expect the kind of response from a small minority of students and faculty who felt, as they put it in a campus-wide email, they felt unsafe because of the words that I spoke. And the words that I spoke was that we're one human race created out of one blood, from one blood, Acts 17. And so we as a people, we shouldn't be colorblind. God created color because it's beautiful, but he never created it for us to separate ourselves by it. And so I say things like we're one human race, that we need to get to know each other beyond the beautiful pigmentation that's on the outside, but that that pigmentation says nothing about another's moral convictions or their political ideology or their worldview at all. And so there are a number of things that we convey that fathers matter. In a culture that wants to redefine science, fathers matter. A mother can't replace a father. A father can't replace a mother. They're inexchangeable. And so there are a lot of things that we talk about that illuminate that we are all created by God and that we are all created with a specific design and that every single human life has purpose, whether you're planned or unplanned, whether you're able or differently abled, whether you're red, yellow, black, brown, or white, it doesn't matter, that we're all created with purpose. And so these presentations, these multimedia talks, really embody those main thoughts, whether it's college campus or conference, I mean, whether it's Harvard, Princeton, you know, USC, or Wheaton College, it's the same heart behind all of it. Our passion is to see people set free by speaking the truth.
Do you think that most of the pushback that you get on your message is because of the pro-life angle, because you're speaking out against abortion?
Well, fundamentally, yes. I mean, that's at Harvard, for instance. There were activists there that were reproductive justice activists, Planned Parenthood activists, LGBT activists, and they melted down throughout the entire presentation because they did not want to hear a pro-life worldview, certainly not one spoken by a man because, you know, men aren't 50% responsible for the biological equation. So it was, yes, there is this pushback, but here's the other thing. Being someone who is an adoptee, being an adoptive father, I have a valuable perspective to bring to this.
You do.
And so, yes, the opposition is primarily against a pro-life worldview that is articulated both in word and in design, but also the issue of race, which, you know, we have a culture right now that is so race fixated and so afraid to actually speak the truth about issues. I speak about the Black Lives Matter movement, for instance. I don't support it. I don't think that many of the tenets of the Black Lives Matter movement can be justified by Scripture. There are many things that are antithetical to Christianity that are part of the Black Lives Matter movement. One, their objective is not for racial reconciliation. Two, the total negation of fathers. They're not even mentioned. They're just non-existent with their objectives, and also the push for radical pro-LGBTQ ideology. So there are things about race that we talk about that people don't accept. You know, the nature and the structure of family, the ideal family with the married mother and father who care for the children they procreate or care for the children that they've adopted. So there's a lot of pushback, and that happens because truth is anathema to those who would just rather embrace relativism. Relativism is so much easier. You can change it every day, every hour. But truth is immutable. It never changes.
Hmm. What do you think it's going to take to get America to become pro-life, and especially to see the day when, Lord willing, there'll be just hardly any abortions, and hopefully it would get to the point where Roe v. Wade would even be overturned?
That is our heart, too. We want to see Roe v. Wade abolished. Of course, that would include Doe v. Bolton as well. A lot of it deals with compassion. How are we as a Christian, too often I see other Christians who confuse capitulation for compassion. And this pro-life fight, we can't be capitulating, because every moment we give in and we surrender is another moment that precious, innocent human life is destroyed. And I'm not even talking just about the unborn, the mothers and the fathers who are also physiologically impacted, psychologically impacted, spiritually impacted. And so there's a lot of work to do, but it has to come from a place of compassion. I mean, one of the motivating verses for the Radiance Foundation and everything that we do and we design is 1 Corinthians 13:6. It says, love does not delight in evil, but it rejoices in the truth. This is what I think too often Christians forget, that there can be a rejoicing that happens, but that requires truth. And too many just give in to the culture, give in to moral relativism and justify this sin and that sin. And in the end, innocent human lives are lost. and impacted in such powerfully negative ways. But when we act out of love, I've seen it change. I've grown up in that, to have two parents who love the mess out of all of us children, those who are written off by the world. They'll never amount to anything. They're unplanned. They have physical disabilities. They have learning disabilities. I grew up seeing how love transforms everything. So that's the way that we try to approach everything with the Radiance Foundation, without being apologetic about speaking and living the truth.
By the way, are the adopted parents, your adoptive parents, are they still alive?
Well, that is a good question, because if you raise 13 teenagers, one would ask the question, are they still alive? Yes, they are still alive.
Really?
Love them like crazy.
Oh, that's great. Are they, fully functioning and everything? And
Well, that's debatable. No, yes, my mom is completely. My dad, unfortunately, has inherited something that's been passed down. Unfortunately, his family is struggling with Parkinson's.
Oh.
His uncle had it. His father had it. His mom, my grandma, had Alzheimer's. So it's something that we're dealing with as a family. But you know what? It illuminates the reality that life still has purpose regardless of our perception of quality of life. My dad's life still impacts us, especially those moments where he's lucid and he's able to be the man that I've always known. He's still the same man. He's just not able to express things the same way and do things the same way.
They
are still alive and kicking.
It's interesting that you were, as you say, the product of a rape, and it's basically because of the exception of rape and incest that abortion in some ways, was accepted. I mean, for example, Roe v. Wade was based on a lie, the lie being that Norma McCorvey was raped, gang raped at that, but she was neither gang raped nor raped. And yet, so through rape, abortion got accepted, and now 60 million abortions later. How about a comment about that, and then about abortion in general?
Well, that's how things happen. I mean, oftentimes these efforts to somehow empower somebody start off in the seemingly innocuous sort of way. Like, why wouldn't you want someone who's experienced the violence of rape to be able to have an abortion? Well, from all the rape survivors that I've met, those who chose a parent, those who chose adoption, those who are post-abortive, there is one common thread, and that is the child is the only redemptive part of such a horrific, violent act.
Wait. Can I stop you? You're saying even though you say those who are post-abortive, I mean, in other words, somebody who was a woman that was raped, she had, she was conceived, and then she had an abortion, and even she regrets the abortion? Flesh that out.
Absolutely. So this, I get to meet hundreds of rape survivors through the work that we do. We do 60 keynote events. So I meet so many different people, and I have had the privilege of being able to talk to rape survivors from those three different areas. And yes, though there are those who are post-abortive who also say that the child is the only redemptive part of it. And yes, there is even regret there, because it's understandable that people think the natural follow-up to rape is abortion. It's understandable, particularly from a secular mindset, because they think this is curing somebody. But one, it doesn't ever punish the rapist. Two, it never brings physical healing to the woman. It certainly doesn't bring emotional healing. It does not change the circumstance of the violence. It actually compounds the violence, which many that we've spoken to also attest to. And so you've got the 1%, which is me, the 1% that is used 100% of the time to justify abortion, and yet you hear these stories from rape survivors. A good friend of mine, Rebecca Berg, who is a mother through rape, Jennifer Christie, a mother through rape, and they will tell you a completely different story than mainstream media will tell you. Mainstream media doesn't want to tell these stories of women choosing to be stronger than their circumstances. And we encounter them all the time. And yes, that's what Roe v. Wade is based on, a complete lie. And here's the thing. Norma McCorvey, Roe, chose adoption. She never aborted her child. And abortion never solved her issues of drug addiction, never solved her issues of homelessness, never solved her issues of brokenness, of sexuality, her own broken sexuality. It was coming to Jesus that addressed those issues.
Exactly.
Listen, abortion.
We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Radiance.life. Ryan Bomberger. Thank you, Ryan. God bless you.
Thank you.